Hello, this is Lincoln reading for you the Iroquois County Times-Republic for Thursday, October 23rd, 2025, beginning at the top of the page. State Fire Marshal, local authorities investigating fatal Milford house fire. By Carla Waters, managing editor. The Office of State Fire Marshal and local authorities are investigating a fatal house fire that occurred in Milford, October 16th. Iroquois County Coroner Bill Cheatham confirmed that Ashley Tucker of Milford died from injuries sustained in that fire. She was taken to Iroquois Memorial Hospital and then flown to Loyola Hospital in Chicago, where she passed away. Milford Fire Department Chief Frank Hines said his department and Iroquois County Sheriff's Police are working with the State Fire Marshal's Office, and representatives of those agencies met again October 21st. I can't really say a whole lot of what we are in the middle of, he said. At this point, the cause, is still undetermined. Hines said there was one other occupant in the house who escaped unharmed. Hines, too, was taken to the hospital for treatment after responding to the scene. The fire department was called at 10:11 p.m. to 208 North Grant. When firefighters arrived, the house was fully involved. Stockland, Woodland, Wellington, Cisna Park, and Watsika departments also responded. He said firefighters completed the overhaul at the scene about 2 a.m. We maintained presence until the State Fire Marshal's office arrived, he said. Help from the public has come in, he said. We've had some help with people that had surveillance cameras and videos. Any of that is helpful. If anyone has information, contact the Sheriff's Department or Fire Department. Any video would help. Fitness equipment in Watsika's Lakeview Park officially opens. By Carla Waters, managing editor. New exercise equipment at Lakeview Park in Watsika was officially opened with a ribbon-cutting ceremony October 21st. Mayor Benny Marcier welcomed everyone. I'd like to thank Amanda Hibbs and the Chamber of Commerce for hosting the ribbon cutting, he said, noting that the previous administration, former Mayor John Allhands, and former City Council members were instrumental in making the project happen. Keith Mulholland of Robinson Engineering explained the grant that was obtained for the project. The Illinois Department of Natural Resources has what's called an OSLAD grant, Open Spaces Lands Acquisition and Development. This is a development project. The city already owned the property here, Mulholland said. This is the first of several features that are going to be installed at this park. We have our outdoor fitness equipment. We'll be converting the concrete pad to the north to three pickleball courts. To the south will be two sand volleyball courts. Our thought was to keep the activities for older people to the north end of the park. As you get to the south end of the park, we're going to put an amphitheater / band show in the back corner, and what will probably be most popular is the splash pad for the children. It will be just north of where the playground equipment is. In rough numbers, this was about a $1.2 million grant. IDNR is reimbursing the city 50%, he said. Public Works Director Lauren Grosvenor said he invited his crew to the ribbon cutting. We have some great additions going on here at Lakeview Park, this being the first of many. With city forces, we're able to offset some costs and stretch our dollars out. Public Works was able to pour the pad, do all the prep work, landscaping, sidewalks. Soon we will be breaking ground for the water main extension for the splash pad that's going to be located over by the playground equipment. Public Works is due to install the band shell as well, and then the sand volleyball possibly yet this year. Weather permitting, we're trying to get as much accomplished as possible, he said. The splash pad will come in the spring, likely the band shell as well. I'd like to thank our crew with Public Works, the Water and Sewer Department. We are all cross-trained. They all pitch in. They do the concrete work. They do the water main work. They do pretty much everything that is asked of them. They are very committed to our community. They all live here within the area. Their families live here. I think they have a great sense of pride to be able to be part of these jobs and give back to their community. I appreciate what they do, and I think the community appreciates it even more by giving us the opportunity to do as much as possible out here. Blue Cross Blue Shield is a co-sponsor of the exercise equipment project at the park. Santonia Scott, a community outreach engagement representative for Blue Cross Blue Shield, spoke to the attendees. It is an honor to join you all today to celebrate our collaboration with Watsika and the National Fitness Campaign to provide free, accessible exercise space for community members of all ability levels, she said. On average, one in two adults don't get enough physical activity in their day-to-day living, she said, which can lead to chronic yet preventable conditions. We saw a need to reduce barriers to improve physical and mental health. In 2020, we joined the National Fitness Campaign to commit to more than $750,000 to bring 30 outdoor fitness courts to communities across Illinois. She said Blue Cross Blue Shield believes consumers and employers deserve the best, which includes access to affordable, quality healthcare benefits. It is our purpose to stand with members in all communities across the state, both in sickness and in health. The sponsorship with the National Fitness Campaign and Watsika builds on our longstanding commitment to wellness initiatives that positively impact all Illinoisans. So on behalf of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois, we want to thank you once again for being here today to celebrate this first fitness court in Watsika. No one injured in Marchanton grain silo collapse, October 15th, by Carla Waters, managing editor. Crews restored power to Marchanton residents and to the Donovan Farmers Co-op elevator on October 16th after a grain silo collapsed the afternoon of October 15th in Marchanton. According to information from Iroquois County Emergency Management Agency Coordinator Scott Anderson, who said his agency was acting as a public information officer, no one was injured in the collapse of the silo, but electricity to the community was knocked out when the silo fell on power lines. Anderson said when an unrelated ambulance call to the elevator at 10:30 a.m. October 15th occurred, ambulance personnel noticed an issue with the silo. With that glance, he noticed a bulge of concrete and rebar beginning to form on the north side of the silo, Anderson said in the press release, recognizing the potential for a significant life safety situation. He notified the Marchanton's fire chief, Jeff Meyer. At approximately 11:15 a.m., Chief Meyer requested fire personnel from Marchanton as well as the adjacent communities of Papineau and Watsika to the elevator. These fire crews were tasked with identifying and evacuating employees from the immediate vicinity of the silo and establishing a protected potential collapse zone. An accurate count of facility workers was obtained, and the removal of the grain from the structure began. At approximately 12:45 p.m., a shift with the grain contained in the silo was noted, and an evacuation of the immediate area was ordered. Within minutes of that order, at approximately 12:52 p.m., the silo started to crumble and collapse. As it fell, it landed on the main structure of power lines and poles that fed the entire village. Following the collapse, Chief Meyer requested additional assistance from Ashcombe Fire and a standby ambulance from Riverside. Thanks to the observant eye of the ambulance personnel at the original call, we were able to evacuate and secure the area around the silo, Marchington Fire Chief Jeff Meyer said. This action certainly prevented what may have been life-threatening injuries or even fatalities. I am extremely grateful to the ambulance crew for bringing this situation to my attention. Throughout the incident, no injuries were reported. Ameren was called to reconstruct lines and set poles. Around midnight, the crews had restored power to the community with only the Donovan Farmers Co-op elevator still without power at that time. Ameren crews had replaced at least 8 poles and power lines. Crew were on scene at the elevator site as of mid-afternoon, October 16th. The concrete grain silo was constructed in 1972. At the time of the collapse, it was filled with 30,000 bushels of soybeans. Residents attend a meeting on Crescent City water rates from staff reporters. A special meeting took place October 14th at the Crescent City Community Center, in which about 30 people attended. The purpose of the meeting was to discuss results of a rate assessment and application to come up with an increase in water rates in the village. The assessment was created by Clark Cameron, a representative of the Illinois Rural Water Association, based on information from the village's water usage and rates. The village joined IRWA in order to become better informed about options available to come up with rates that will help increase water revenues. The assessment was based on 308 customers who pay $85 for the first 10,000 gallons of water used, and another $7.50 for each 1,000 gallons used over the base. Water bills are issued only twice per year in the village, so the total for 6 months is generally $26,180, and the annual income from water would be $52,360. Cameron noted, with the latest numbers available, 28,457,000 gallons were produced, but the amount of water actually sold, used, is 14,557,674. That leaves 13,899,326 gallons of water produced but not sold, which is 48.84% of the total produced. The almost 14 million gallons of water are not being paid for, and they are lost and are unaccounted for and not available to the community. Through membership with IRWA, it is hoped that their specialists can come to the village and discover where the water is going and see if it can be captured and used productively. The water could be leaking into a dome under the village or other unknown areas, Cameron said, water seeks the path of least resistance, so there could be several areas where the unused water is going. Based on the numbers Cameron used, the village shows an annual loss of $22,729.13. The almost almost 15 million gallons unaccounted would be worth approximately $104,244.95 to the water account. In working the application, Cameron came up with a rate of $100 for the first 9,000 gallons used, and an additional $18 for each 1,000 gallons over the base. This means a bill for someone using 1,000 gallons of water in the six-month billing period would pay $138, compared to $92.50 using the old rate. Although no one wants to see an increase, Cameron noted Crescent City has the lowest rates by far of any area I know. Using the proposed rate increase, the water unaccounted for could mean an additional $250,187.87. In providing water service, the village uses ERH to help maintain the water system. It has contracted with a company that provides basic maintenance and upkeep of the water tower. ERH is continuing to install and maintain new fire hydrants, and several years ago, a filtration system was installed. Now it's time the village takes on the project of installing a new water main along Route 24 and begin repairing and/or replacing many of the older mains throughout the village. Although the village is seeking grants to help with the majority of the work needed to be done, some of the work may have to be done with loans. A loan through the EPA isn't out of the question, as well as other avenues, but the village has to be able to show its ability to repay the loan. It will be hard to secure funding if there is a deficit in the water fund. Cameron fielded questions and concerns from several of those who attended the meeting. Some of the suggestions included changing how often bills are sent out, which would make the amount due lower, but other costs would be added, such as the price of the bills and postage. The bill's next meeting is Monday, November 3rd at 7 p.m. Mayor Mark Raby encouraged those present to attend the meeting and to encourage their friends and neighbors to attend the meeting or reach out to the board. Since the meeting, the IRWA representative is scheduled to be in the community on November 6th to see about locating leaks and areas where water may be lost. Time to decorate trees, create Christmas houses at Old Courthouse Museum by Kim Rabe for the Times Republic. Once October hits its midway point, it's time to start thinking about decorating a tree for Christmas Tree Lane and creating a Christmas house for the Old Courthouse Museum, 103 East Cherry, Watseka. This year's Christmas Tree Lane is the 57th annual and has a theme of Christmas memories. This annual event is sponsored by Iroquois County Historical Society. Any group, organization, business, family, classroom, church, or individual can reserve a tree by calling 815-432-2215 during office hours of 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. Full details and a registration form are available on the museum's website of IroquoisCountyHistoricalSociety.com. Trees must be decorated and Christmas houses delivered to the museum by 4 p.m. Tuesday, December 2nd. For all trees and houses, People's Choice Awards will be selected by cash donations from museum visitors. A panel of judges will select the best decorated. When registering your tree, you will choose to be judged in one of three additional categories: best handcrafted ornaments, most original, and best use of theme. Decorating begins Monday, November 3rd, during regular business hours, but trees can be reserved now. Those who decorate trees will need to provide their own lights and decorations, of course, and topper if desired. It is asked decorations not include glitter or be made from food. Christmas house entries can be created and will be judged in two categories: those made of gingerbread and those made of any other medium. They do need to be kept at a size which can fit into a display case, and they don't have to follow the theme. Judges will choose winners in best decorated and most original. They do need to be kept to a size which can fit into a display case, and they don't have to follow the theme. Registration forms for house entries are located on the above-listed website. ICHS and museum staff understand it is hard for some to get to the museum to decorate. The basic schedule for decorating trees is as follows. Decorating begins Monday, November 3rd, and continues to 4 p.m. Tuesday, December 2nd. Your museum hours are 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. The museum will be closed November 27th and 28th for the Thanksgiving holiday, but the museum will be open 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday, November 30th, for decorating trees or delivering houses. The last day to decorate will be Tuesday, December 2nd. Voting on trees and houses begins Wednesday, December 3rd at 10 a.m. Christmas Tree Lane and Christmas House Gallery officially open to the public for viewing Christmas Tree Lane and Christmas House Gallery officially opened to the public for viewing and voting on Wednesday, December 3rd, and will continue during regular office hours through Tuesday, December 23rd. The open house for visitors to view and vote for their favorite trees and houses will be 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday, December 7th. The museum will also be open for special viewing 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday, December 21st. Voting finishes at 4 p.m. Tuesday, December 23rd. The museum will be closed December 24th through the 25th and open for viewing only from 1 to 4 p.m. Friday, December 26th. The museum will then be closed for the Christmas and New Year's holidays, Saturday, December 27th through Thursday, January 1st. Christmas Tree Lane and Christmas House Gallery are sponsored by ICHS, a nonprofit organization. Fundraisers take place throughout the year in order to help offset maintenance, updates, repairs, utility bills, and such. Any questions relating to Christmas Tree Lane or Christmas House Gallery can be addressed by calling the office at 815-432-2215 during normal business hours. Iroquois County lifts burn ban October 19th. The Iroquois County burn ban was lifted October 19th. According to information from Iroquois County Emergency Management Agency Coordinator Scott Anderson, the Eastern Illinois Fire Chiefs Association, along with County Board Chairman Paul Ducat and the entire Iroquois County Board, notified all Iroquois County residents that the burn ban that was in place countywide was officially lifted that day. The significant rainfall over the entire county has greatly reduced the risk of rapidly spreading fires. With the high winds predicted, If the choice to burn is made, Anderson advised in the press release, people should never leave the fire unattended and have an extinguishment source readily available. The Eastern Illinois Fire Chiefs Association, the Iroquois County Board, and Chairman Paul Ducat, and the Iroquois County Emergency Management Agency would like to thank everyone that respected the ban. And now, opinion, why we went to the No Kings protest. The nationwide No Kings protest last Saturday felt different. Democrats were not the only ones who showed up. Here in Indiana, over 40 communities held peaceful gatherings. In a state that voted almost 59% for President Trump in 2024. Administration surrogates tried to portray the gathering as a Hate America rally, but it was the opposite. My neighbors and I all love this country, but we're deeply concerned about the increasing threats to American democracy, and even though we may vote for different candidates, we showed up together to resist the descent into authoritarianism. We're alarmed by the administration's intimidation of judges, journalists, elected officials, and others, trying to silence anyone who might speak out against President Trump or the bulldozing of our freedoms. They have threatened to revoke broadcast licenses to suppress criticism, and they've removed even Republican prosecutors who refuse to pursue political vendettas. It's an assault on free speech and the rule of law. We reject the idea that our armed forces should be deployed against Americans. We know the excuses are false. Crime rates were dropping in the cities and protests against ICE were peaceful. Treating our own communities as war zones and our own citizens as enemies violates our rights and weakens our nation. We're angry that Indiana state legislators are being bullied by the administration, trying to force them to redraw our congressional districts so there is no seat a Democrat might win. Texas and Missouri went along with this effort to rig the U.S. House of Representatives with a permanent Republican majority, but Hoosiers don't like being told what to do. So our Republican representatives are being threatened with well-funded primary opponents, and our governor is worried that Indiana will be punished financially. The founders of this nation fought a revolution to ensure fair representation. Such gerrymandering strips us of our constitutional rights. These are the actions of a wannabe dictator, a wannabe king, not the work of a democratic leader serving the people. As a religious leader, I cherish our sacred traditions of protest. Many of my neighbors are deeply religious people as well. Some of us have ancestors who came to this country fleeing rulers who preserved their own power by turning their people against one another. But our traditions teach us how to overcome hate with love. We stand together. We stand together against shameless grabs for power and callous policies that make people's lives harder. We stand together against the devastating damage to our democracy. We took to the streets together with our American flags alongside our signs of protest to make clear that the majority of the American people reject President Trump's extreme authoritarian agenda. Rachel S. Mikva is the author of Interreligious Studies and Introduction and Monotheism and Pluralism. She is a Michigan City, Indiana resident who recently attended an October 18th event. And this is Lincoln. I have read for you the Iroquois County Times-Republic for Thursday, October 23rd, 2025. Have a fabulous day.